Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. You will hear my calls to friends, the sounds of Dubai streets, and most importantly, the stories of entrepreneurs who opened a business and settled here in the Emirates. I'm Isaac. I came to Dubai to put down my roots here. The stories of entrepreneurs who have already succeeded here will help me on my way. In each episode, I interview people from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, and other countries. I don't know which ones yet because the story is just the beginning. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. I talked to Aisha Chishti. She lives in Dubai for more than 20 years, and she's the founder and the CEO of Skin Concept. It's a brand of handmade, natural, and sustainable bath and skincare products. And you know, I kind of got used to the fact that natural products are usually whether beige or earthy colors. Well, she has a completely different approach because her soap looks like a bright cupcake or like a fruity ice cream. Yummy. And like many of us, Aisha started with a corporate job.
So I was born and brought up in Saudi Arabia, Jeddah to be specific. I did my schooling there. Then I went to India to do my BBA and my MBA. Then I got married and I moved to Dubai. Initially, I was in corporate jobs. I worked for Etihad Airways, Singapore Airlines, hotel industry as well, the Rosewood Hotels. Then I wanted to start something of my own.
But Aisha didn't launch her own brand right away. She started her business as a franchise.
There was a brand in India that when I was a teenager, I was growing up, I used to use their products on my skin. That was the only brand that I was allowed to use. She was a pioneer of natural and herbal skincare in India. She was the first one to commercialize herbal products. This was like 50 years back. After she did it, everybody followed her, but she was like the pioneers. So we happened to get in a conversation and somehow landed up having a franchise of that brand in the UAE. So then I got her franchise into Dubai. I opened her salon, took her distribution ship for products. So I started the salon. Whatever income we were getting out of it, we would reinvest it into the salon for marketing. Everything was going smooth. But I always felt that I was still working for someone. It was not my brand.
You know, when I was in corporate and deciding to go into my free direction, let's say it like that, right? I remember I was sitting like in the kitchen, it was late night, and I was working on something, and I just realized that it's midnight or so, I'm very tired, and it's not even my business, you know? I'm like, why am I doing this? So that point, like that scene exactly for me was the point of no return. I was like, okay, that's it. I'm finishing now. I'm going into my own business from now on. Do you have this specific moment when you made that decision? You know, something where you were like, okay, this is it.
Yeah. So we are talking about 2017, towards the end of 2017. Back then, Facebook marketing had become omnipresent. Instagram was just launched and people like, you know, now you're supposed to have an Instagram account and post on Instagram. So when all of this happened, we spoke to our principal. So her vision was that my products speak for themselves and I don't need to create ads. I don't need to advertise. So there was no print ad. There was no video ad. There was nothing in the newspaper, nowhere. So she was still in that mode. So we were like, you know, you can't stay there. You have to move out of it. We have to start Facebook marketing. We have to start Instagram marketing, which then ultimately they did for themselves, for their India market. They started doing it for their market. And when I asked them that, you know, whatever posts you're creating, because at that time there was no Canva, there was nothing, there was just Photoshop. And that took a lot of time to do, you know, to create a post was so difficult in 2018. So I told them, whatever you're creating, you already have the creative, you give it to us as well, and we will post it on our Dubai Instagram. They were like, no, what we are creating is for our market. If you won't do it for your market, you do it on your own. That was the point when I was like, if they are not willing to invest in their brand, why should I do it? But there came a point where I was at a juncture where I could invest more into the salon from like outside, or over invested with not from within the business, or I could sell it. My husband, alhamdulillah, was good with his job, so he was ready to invest in it. But I was like, do I want that investment for this business, or should I start something new? If I have to work hard, so hard, because I used to really work hard, it was like waking up, going to the salon, coming home, going to sleep, waking up, going to the salon, coming home, sleeping. So if I was willing to work so hard, I would rather than work on something that's my own. That was the decision I want to really do. Because in 2018, I sold my salon and I took about 6-7 months break to think of what I want to do with myself now.
Although Aisha sold her salon, which she worked on for 6 years, this time was definitely long in vain. She learned how the entire business worked, how to run all the processes, and she understood the main need of her future customers.
I started the salon when I was young, obviously, and in the 6 years I had matured up. I had learned about business. I had learned more about the world. In corporate jobs, you don't understand the whole running of the business. You're just doing your job. But when you're running a business, because you have to run everything, there's a more maturity comes out of it. So those 6 years gave me a lot of insight into what is important, what I should focus on. The brand was basically into facials. So fixing skin issues was one of the major forte that we had. And majorly when we used to have clients, they would complain that I went through a medical treatment that did this to me, or I went through a laser treatment that did this to me, or I used a very strong chemical product that spoiled my skin, or I experiment a lot with my skin, so now my skin has become like this, please fix it. People would come and ask me, we want to do what you do for your skin. We want to do the facial that you do. And believe me, in the 6 years I ran this salon, maybe I did 6 facials. First of all, there was no time for it. And secondly, alhamdulillah, it was not needed, because even when I was at home in the morning, I would just take something and I would rub it on my face and I was done for it, right? And also because I had not used any chemicals on my skin from before, there were no major issues. I had always been into natural skincare. You know, in our house, we were brought up like that. In our house, we'd always have some or the other herbs or peels drying off, and my mother would make scrubs with them for us, and we grew up with the concept of only natural products could go on our skin because they actually get absorbed into the skin. So we were never allowed to experiment with our skincare or anything. So my mom again was the same. She would tell us that, you know, don't look for quick fixes for your any issues that you have, whether it's your skin issues or you have issues in your life, whether they're mental issues, whether you have relationship issues, don't look for quick fixes. I would hear people that, oh, there's a wedding coming up, let's go do a facial. But my aunt and my mother never needed it because they would do it every day. This was a regular thing. So for anything, I think we have to work on it at all times instead of finding quick fixes for it. And that's what chemical products do for you, right? They do a quick fix for you and you don't have to work hard on anything at all times. So that's how I think those crept into our life. So during that time, I understood that chemicals, we already knew this, but interacting with clients for 6 years with these issues, it even enforced the fact that yes, chemicals are not good for our skin. So then when it came to starting my own brand, I knew it had to be something natural.
Your first products Aisha made on her balcony.
This was back in 2018 when I was doing my soaps and my little factory from my bedroom balcony. So I covered up my balcony and I started experimenting there.
How did you start it? How did you decide to do it? And like, how did it happen?
I used to consult for a company called Himalaya Naturals in their influencer events. So we used to put up displays where we would take up natural ingredients and we'd make a mask or a scrub right in there according to the influencer's skin type. So we'd make a powder form and we'd tell them that, you know, you go back home and you mix it with this and that and you apply it to your skin. And we would also do it on their hands in the event. During that event, I met a soap maker. She used to do a different kind of soap that was not what I do, but I attended her class for two, three days. I learned to make a few things from her, but she was doing more of melt and pour soap, which is like you have a soap base that you melt and you add whatever ingredients and colors you want in it and you make the soap. But that was not something I do. I was comparing it to how you cook. So it's like you have something already available in the market. You bring it home, you heat it and you serve it in a platter and you eat it. That was not the way I used to operate anyways. For me, things have to be from scratch. So then I started looking at how do people make soap from scratch. I started researching on that and I found so many soap makers in America, in Canada, in Japan, in Korea. They were doing amazing stuff. You would be shocked to see them. I mean, I was at least because I'd never seen them. Then we traveled to America and we traveled to Canada to sort of look for colleges for our children because they were growing up. They were like in 9th and 10th grade. So we're like, now we know they'll have to move somewhere. But when I went to the US in Las Vegas, I went to the Nectar USA's store and seeing all their colorful cupcakes and their yummy looking scrubs and all those things. And I was like, wow, I wish someday I could make these things. Then when I came back from America, I started making soap. I started experimenting with soaps, with small batches, how they come, how is it made, what happens when a soap is made. So very small, like a batch of like 6-7 soaps. That's what I was making at that time. But that was all, I somehow also feel that when you're in a good time in your life, and you're like, you know, I don't need, so I've just sold my business and my husband is doing well in his job. I have a new baby. I'm enjoying life right now. I don't want to be going and thinking of some business, but this is something that's nice. And, you know, you have it in the back of your head that this is something I might enjoy doing.
But at that moment, everything in your life changed dramatically.
Then came COVID. By March of 2020, Dubai was shut down because of COVID. April 2020, my husband was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition. It was a tough time of our life. By the end of April, he could not work. He could not get himself to go to work. So he had to leave his job. And Dubai was closed. And because it was an autoimmune condition, the medicines that he was taking had to keep his immunity very low. So we could not even go back to our country because COVID was widespread there. It was wild over there. And because of the pollution and everything back in India, doctor said if you go back, he will not survive. From April to June, we had that money that we had and we were like, you know, maybe as soon as things open up, we will move back. We started telling our children that, you know, our situation is this. This is the only money that we have left. We can either spend it all here or we can go back to our home country and do something about it. But there was no option of going back to the home country as well, right? Because my husband, though the doctors had told him that your survival in India will be very difficult because your immunity is really low and COVID is massively spread in India. But, you know, because there was no other choice, he was still ready to take that risk of his health, you know, because there was no other option. And I could not even go out and get a job for myself because the whole world was closed. A lot of belief in God, a lot of prayers, a lot of those hopes were there. But there was this thing in my heart that, you know, no, something is going to happen. Something will come up. Something will happen. And that's when the same day that my son's grade 10th result came, the same day Spinneys called me that I was selected for the program.
The program she talks about is Spinneys Local Business Incubator. And in this incredibly tough period of her life, it will help Aisha take the step she's ready for, to launch the very business that she has been holding at the back of her head. That's how it happened.
Luckily, alhamdulillah, in June of 2020, Spinneys, the supermarket, a very high-end supermarket in Dubai, they ran a local business incubator. It was for basically for F&B brands, but we still took part in it. So we put up, I made a whole presentation with our profile and everything. That was the first time I made the presentation and sort of made it an official brand. And we submitted it there. Alhamdulillah, we got chosen for it because the management of Spinneys is more of European and they're from the West side. So they understand these things. So they understand handmade products. So my incubator was a supermarket, right? So when they did the incubation, they got these local businesses on board and they supplied their products into their supermarkets. That was the whole incubation about. And because I knew that I had a place to sell now, so I could make more. At that time, we had about 7-8 SKUs, 2 lip balms, 2 scrubs, and about 4-5 soaps that I used to make at that time.
And you were all making it at your balcony?
In my balcony, yes. Entered into Spinneys, that's when they were like, you know, to put up products in Spinneys, you cannot just have 7 products of your brand. You have to have a whole range. That was not enough for them. So I had plans of different products that I would launch later on. So I started experimenting with those products immediately as to what the formulas, what other products we can launch in our business. Obviously, because my husband did not have a job, whatever his end of service was, he invested into my business. Then he said, you know, if this is something you want to do and if you have an opportunity, I will invest into it. And by January, when we launched, we had 10 category of products and 52 SKUs.
Wow. That's a huge growth, like just within 6 months, you know?
Because there was no other choice. It was like a do or die situation, you know? It was like, this is what you do. You invest into it, work hard for it. Otherwise, you just go back home and eat what you have saved. If things are just for yourself, if it was just me and my husband, we would still have thought, okay, let's just go back and live our life. But we had 3 children whose future we had to think about. And, you know, every time we'd tell them that, you know, we might have to go back to India, their faces would become really small. They never said that, you know, we'll not go back. They're good kids, alhamdulillah. So they're like, yeah, this is what it is. Okay. But, you know, we'd see that they're not happy with the decision. So looking at the children, and I will, obviously there's no other choice that you have. You have to work hard. You have to grow out of your comfort zone and create things. And because Dubai was in lockdown, I could not even go out and create a factory outside. So then what I did was I took the largest room in my house. Alhamdulillah, I have a big house. So the formal drawing room that I had, I took that, I converted that into my factory, and that's where we work from. We got approval from municipality to work from home. The factory was approved by them, and that's where we work from. Even today, we work from there.
How did you come up with this production? I mean, how did you experiment, and how many tries did you have to go through, like, to get to this formula?
First time I made soap, go and check out on YouTube or on Instagram pages of people who are successfully already doing it as to what they're talking about. What is the oil that they talk about? Is there a formula that they give out somewhere? And there are a lot of formulas available on YouTube. But even with those formulas, I could not come up with something that was more for me because it's really hot here. You know, if you keep a soap in your washroom and even if it's not wet, because of the heat, it gets affected. So first I was using oils only. Then they said that, you know, you could add butters to it as well. So I added shea butter, cocoa butter to it, different oils, and then tweaking it up and down. If the soap is made for a face, then what should it have? If it has a scrub in it, what should we remove from it, add to it? So a lot of experimentation, a lot of spoiled soaps, a lot of goo and guff, a lot of oil wasted, but ultimately, alhamdulillah, we came up with a formula, a different formula for the face, a different formula for the body that really works well for us.
Do you remember that moment when, you know, that's the first soap that worked out just the way you wanted? Like, how did that make you feel? How did it happen?
So when we add coffee scrub to coffee, it somehow absorbs all of the water that's in the oil and it starts to leave oil. And so the first time I made coffee scrub soap, the first day when I poured it, it was fine. But the next day morning, there was a pool of oil on top of the soap. And I was like, hey, what have I done? What have I done? I had to throw that. Because back in the West, because it's so cold, people put their soaps to cure or to gel, actually, to convert to soap in their ovens. But here, everything is an oven itself. So a lot of experiments. That's what I'm saying. From 2018 to 2020, I was just experimenting and coming up with formulas that were, you know, working well for us. And I would look at some soap that would inspire me. I would make that. My mom used to make this scrub that the whole family, even my school friends, knew that she makes this scrub, this powder that she makes with dried herbs and botanicals. That is something I have created as a product for my brand as well. It's called the Royal One Face Scrub. That's something that my mom would make all the time. It was always there in our house. And so that's something. And I have named it after her. Her name translated into the Royal One. So I've called it the Royal One.
Wow. And how would you get, you know, the ingredients? And can you tell a little bit about ingredients? Because this is the essential part of the whole business, right? The ingredients, because they're natural.
So it was very important for us that we chose the best ingredients available in the market. I did not want to use sulfates. I did not want to use parabens. I did not want to use cheap fragrances. And personally, I was not a fan of essential oils. So I wanted perfumes. And there's a beauty world that happens in Dubai every year in May. I went there to look for companies that would provide us with fragrances. But the issue was that all of those vendors were like, you know, the minimum order that you have to place is 25 kgs for one fragrance. And we were a small business. So we're like, you know, we can't do that. I want the maximum I'll take is maybe, if I'm being very, very opulent about it, I would maybe take 5 kgs from you, but not 25. That would just be waste. But they're like, no, we only deal with big companies. So that was one challenge that I had. But luckily, as I was exiting Beauty World, just at next to the exit, there was this brand and I spoke to them. They were fragrances. They were a UK brand. Their fragrances were amazing. And I was like, you know, but you must also be giving bulk. Yeah, it's like, no, we can do 1-2 kg as well. I was like, wow. Okay.
Not all suppliers could be found at the trade fair like this. Most of them were found online, but online vendors have their own problems, right?
Most of my time would go in either approvals, getting the products approved, or finding the right suppliers. And because they were like outside of the country and we had never dealt with them, you know, sort of that dilemma of whether they would deliver or not, should we just pay them and wait for it to happen? And because money was not something that I had in abundance, it was like I had a limited budget. And if this goes to waste, then it'll be a problem. So all those things at that time were, those were what took major of my time. Alhamdulillah, it has always, I've never been cheated, I would say.
Yeah, you're well aware of that, you know, of all those things. Maybe the experience of running your own business like franchise and having the education MBA, do you think that helped somehow with that?
Yes. So I remember once when I started the salon, that this guy came to our shop and he's like, you know, you want brochures and leaflets printed. And we're at that time, I had plenty of money to spend, right? So I was like, yeah, we want these printed. And he took up all of the requirements we had and we paid him in advance and everything. And he disappeared. So I was like, really? Does that happen? Does that ever happen to people? So that was something that have made me really conscious about who I'm dealing with. So I think that's when I started my own thing, I was like, no, I'm not going to be, inshallah, fooled. And alhamdulillah, God has been merciful in that regard as well. So when later on, when new business owners would call me and ask me, you know, where do you source this from? Can you let us know? First, I was like, no, I'm not going to disclose my suppliers because I got them with so much difficulty. But then later on, I realized that what will happen if she gets it also from there? She will make her own product. She has her own space. She will have her own clients. She's not going to get into my clients. So then I started sharing my suppliers with people that, you know, don't waste your time looking for them. Here's a good one. Buy this from them. If you want to buy this, buy that from XYZ supplier.
I also asked about required approvals for the business because I'm very curious how it works.
Whoever wants to sell any skincare or body-related products in Dubai, they need to put up their products there for registration. They send them for lab tests, different kind of lab tests. And once they're approved, then you get the registration for 5 years, approval for 5 years, and you can sell your products. That's how it works here. So for somebody who looks at it for the first time, it's very, very overwhelming and you don't want to do it because it's a tedious process. But it's very streamlined. Once you get to know it, once you do it, the people at that department are very helpful. They're very responsive. So if you know to ask the right questions and get the right help, then it gets very easy. I would suggest for startups, if suppose there is a skin startup who makes products and wants to get approvals, do it yourself. Because the registration fee is like 10 dirhams. If you apply for registration, once you get the certificate, you have to pay 220 dirhams to get that certificate. But application is just 10 dirham per product. But if you go to a consultancy who will do it for you, they will charge you like 500 dirhams per product to register it for you. For a small business, it gets very difficult to do that, especially if you have like 50 products to register. So during the 6 months that we were making the products and researching them, so as we had the product ingredients and we had the final product ready after testing and everything, we would upload it on their portal. And Spinneys really helped us get the approvals quickly.
In Aisha's story, everything went well. The product line had grown, sales in the supermarket were full speed ahead. But then another thing came, and it forces Aisha to explore other sales channels.
We launched in January of 2021. And by March of 2021, COVID re-happened. The second wave of COVID came, right? So people stopped going to the supermarket. And because we were a new brand, people were not looking for us. If they would go to the supermarket, they see it, they like it, they buy it. But nobody was going to the supermarket. So those 3 months of ordering online again from March to June, that was one of the setbacks we had with Spinneys. So then we had to pivot and think of other ways of earning our money, right? So how much could we spend on marketing to just sell D2C? At that time, a lot of commercial brands who were doing commercial factory-made products, they wanted to start their handmade range as well. So then they started coming to us that we want to white label our product, your product in our name. We did a few of those.
When you said your product, but with our names, how did it feel? Because, you know, you worked so hard to get your name there and everything. How did that feel?
The thing is, if a brand has decided that they want to get their products manufactured, they will get it manufactured from someone, right? So why not me then? Why should I not get that? In Islam, they say that, you know, whatever God has sent down for you, you will always get it. Nobody can take it from you and nobody can give you more than what has been written for you. So whatever is mine will come to me. Whatever is theirs will go to them. Nobody can take what's mine and nobody can give me what's not mine. So I work with that. If somebody comes to me, tells me we want to white label products, I tell them, sure. But there's a cost for it then. I was in a situation where I'd be like, I need something to keep this running. Next time I got the white labeling order from this company, it was a handmade company run by a lady, was bought over by a venture capital company, and the owner exited. She sold the company and she exited. The venture capital company had nobody to make the product for them. The formulas were there, but they did not have anyone to make it for them. So they came to us that, you know, we have the formula. This is the product. These are the fragrances. Can you make it for us? So we were making it for them. And at that time then, I think we need to be confident in ourselves as well, that what I have is valuable. What I have has a price. What I have cannot be sold cheap. I mean, if you look at the products that are in the market selling for thousands of dirhams, and if you actually go and look into the ingredients, they're crap. But what we are making here are ingredients that are good for your skin. So first I had to tell myself that what I have is valuable. And this takes time. It took me 2 years to realize that I'm working nonstop with this thought in my head that my company is running. We're doing production. We are hiring people. We are dispatching orders. We're doing very well. But where's the money then? Why is the money not coming in? Because we were selling cheap. We have great projects right now. We are doing gift boxes for hotels like Burj Al Arab as well. So, alhamdulillah, things are going well. But there's always that thing that when I focus on the company, the brand sort of suffers, that I'm not able to focus on the brand itself. You're making white label product or you're making product for someone else and you're focusing on production of that needs to be the best. Then you lose focus on the brand. And then when that project gets over, then the brand has suffered so much during that time that you have to really work on the brand. So jumping here and there again then gets...
To keep the brand afloat, Aisha hired a marketing agency to ensure the sales. And she got very valuable experience.
We hired this agency to do it for us. And their whole concept was, okay, we're going on sale. We're on this sale. We're on that sale. And we realized after working them for a whole year that, you know, we're just thinking that we're making sale, but we're actually not getting anything out of it. For through the marketing agency also, I told them that, okay, this is the budget that I have. I will spend on marketing. This is your payment fee. This is my product costing. If we do 5,000 dirhams of sale per month with this budget, we will be fine. But then that was at full cost. But the agency was selling it at discounts, 20% discount, 30% discount, 40% discount. And we're like, yay, we're making sale. But there's no money coming in because it's all gone, right? And that takes time to realize what's happening. Orders are coming in every day. We're dispatching orders. Amazon is also ordering. Noon is also ordering. Our websites are being on sale. People are buying on our website. These are not your returning customers. And believe me, when I stopped the sales on the website, I told the agency, please go. I will handle it myself. When we stopped the sales, we stopped marketing. That is when people started finding us. On our website, when we were on sale, the cart value used to come around 90 dirhams, 78 dirhams. If it's amazing, it will go to 128 dirhams, 130 dirhams. But when we stopped the sales, we were not pushing people to buy it. Then people who actually wanted to buy it, actually were our customers, they started coming in and our basket size went to 250 dirhams also. People came to our website and just spent 500 dirhams on it. And it took a lot of courage and a lot of experience to tell people that, no, my product is not for sale. Because when you start a business and you have this product in with you, you just want to sell it at any cost. You want to make a sale. But I would want to tell startups that you have to make the right sale.
It took Aisha a year to see that one of the sales methods just doesn't work and marketing only takes money away from the business, not earns it. And this is what I hear from entrepreneurs like most often. To succeed, learn to count. So I talked to JP, marketing director from Fortis, about how to make decisions based on data.
Most businesses today are adapting to the new ways of consuming, which is online, aggregators, in-shop, by delivery, also on Amazon and Noon and all of these marketplaces, mean that you have several platforms that each has its own performance and each requires time taken out of your day to manage. And so imagine that 75% of your sales comes from Amazon and 20% comes from your shop, then maybe it's not worth investing in an online website or investing to upgrade your online website unless you think there's potential. But that's the kind of question that we enable merchants to ask themselves and try to make the best decision. There is no golden rule because every business is different, but what Fortis can help you with is to understand how your sales are doing and understanding how your business is performing, which product is selling the most, from which channel, are insights that can take a business to the next level. And that kind of insight cannot be found on pen and paper. If you take your orders as a business by writing down your orders, it can be very difficult to centralize that data.
I told JP about what I learned from Aisha, that the channel that brings you revenue does not always bring profit. And in return, he told me a story about inventive restaurateurs. And he told me that even sales that don't bring you profit, they still can be useful.
I go on Karim, which is a massive aggregator, to order my food. I order from an Indian restaurant. What I'll often find in my bag, in the bag that they deliver to you with your food items, is a brochure that says, order directly from us and you'll get 10% off. So they're trying to convert me into buying from their business directly. So what I think is happening is that they're getting the exposure that they want and they're getting sales, but they're not getting profits. And they're not cutting that operation off. They're keeping it and they're trying to convert their customers into buying from them so that they can make a better margin. So it's a strategy. You have to understand why you're going in it and what's the effect of it on your business. And that is what Fortis allows you to, again, see.
Although technological services can provide you with numbers where how much has been sold, like for how much, but it's still up to you to build a strategy and make a decision. And it's not always easy.
So the capacity that we have right now is we can have 30 people working in this space and we can manufacture up to 5,000 units per day. So we've done 30,000 soaps from here. We do like 4,000, 5,000 gift boxes that go out from here. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of different work. When you focus on one thing, the other thing gets missed out. And so, yes, we have to outsource. But again, I somehow cannot put myself in a position where I have this trust in my head that, okay, I hire somebody, for example, a marketing or an admin person, and what if I'm not able to pay them, right? So I hire them, they come on board, they're really nice. I pay them for the first 3 months. What if I'm not able to pay them after that? So that's something that really scares me. And that's why I don't make the hire anyways. So it's just like, it's like a vicious circle, right? You don't hire, so you don't grow. You don't grow, so you don't hire. And then you just keep round and round. So I also feel that with bootstrapping, there's only as much that a company can do. So with bootstrapping, we have done this. We have projects. We are selling online. We are selling on different platforms. We are available in different places. So my husband gave me a budget of 140,000 dirhams in July of that year. So we survived 6 months' salaries, raw material, packaging material, labels. The house also survived on that. The whole business was set up on that. We did the whole stock of spinnies on that, and we still had money left from there after 6 months.
Wow. Congratulations.
Being an Indian housewife teaches you that.
That's your unfair advantage, you know? This is the unfair advantage that we can use.
Keep on working with the same energy and the same enthusiasm forever, right? So I also have days when I'm like, you know what, I'm done with this. I can't do this anymore. Or maybe I should just let it be where it is right now and not try to grow it. And then you have to still motivate yourself that, you know what, get up, rest for some time. And even if you have to cry for 2 days, sit and cry for 2 days, feel bad for yourself. Oh, where are you stuck? Why are you the one who has to do all the hard work? Do that and then get up and do, because that's what you're made to do. We're not sent on this earth to have easy, easy lives. We have to work hard. Otherwise, what's the point of life, right? If you don't work hard, what's the point? How much Netflix can you watch? How much Instagram can you watch? How much TikTok can you watch?
You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis' social media. Links are in the episode description. Listen to Crossing the Desert on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Spotify, and whenever you listen to podcasts. Add us to your favorites and leave your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us and we'll be pleased. Production by Hatch Up Podcast Studio. Showrunners Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer Daria Sanikova. Scriptwriter and editor Alexandra Volkova. History consultant Alena Podnebenna. Sound designer Mikhail Vasiliev. And I'm your host, Isaac Delonin.